User.
Should have eaten dinner.
Good evening. It is evening. This is the Arista Gamer Podcast for July 2012. Joining me is, as always, Casey and Devin.
As always.
As always.
So we're going to go ahead and get into a few topics here. There have been a few lesser known cons that have been going on. I guess as far as gaming goes, they're not, you know, the primary cons that you think about, but they have yielded some interesting results, specifically RTX and Comic-Con. Just real quick.
Yeah, that's a little less known, Comic-Con. Who goes to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, for gaming, that's not the first thing that jumps to your mind. You're like, okay, game development conference, PAX, E3, Tokyo DC. Game Show. That's about it.
Yeah, I guess only lately, since games have gotten a lot bigger, has Comic-Con started to incorporate more and more an area for gaming. I heard there's like an Xbox lounge and a GameSpot lounge and stuff where you get like free food and whatnot.
Yep, there was. But first, before that was, not this past weekend, but the weekend before that was RTX, the Rooster Teeth Expo from the guys who bring us Red and Blue. I was lucky enough to sit on a few panels to get some ideas for the website, but mainly the reason why we were there is because Halo 4 was out for the first time for the public to play. It was really cool, and the line was huge. It was like you had to wait in line for 2 hours to play it, and you got, I think, a 15-minute multiplayer session. We couldn't get any video. They weren't allowing that, but it was really neat.
Oy vey.
I linked to a gameplay video that they did live on stage. But, I mean, essentially, a lot of the things that you can see, it's Halo 4 is, it seems to be taking a little bit from Call of Duty, though I haven't played Reach or ODST, so I don't know if that changed, but they now have a loadout menu. Whenever you come into a lobby, they have loadouts, so you can start with different weapons. You can still pick up other weapons as well, but you know, they have different starting weapons for you. They have different game modes. So it seems like they've picked out the good things from Call of Duty, slash Battlefield, slash, you know, any really modern warfare type game, and have integrated it into Halo. So the physics are all Halo. The gameplay feels like Halo, but they've stripped away the interface for the most part. They've only got, you know, I think a very small, transparent mini map. You know, and the indicator of where your health is and your ammo is indicated on your gun. So, you know, you get to see more of the game. It's better for, you know, for people who just want to see the backgrounds and everything. Yeah, it looks a lot nicer. And
honestly, I don't know how I feel about Halo leaving the weapons are scattered around the map, GoldenEye style, and going more towards the Call of Duty. You have a loadout, and you can start with different weapons, and you know you earn your weapons as you level up kind of thing. I didn't play that much Halo, but when I did, I always chose Dos Equis. I always liked being able to run around on the map and finding the weapons. So, you know, it forces you to learn the map more, so that way you can actually find the weapons. It was just a different feel, and I kind of like that about Halo. I didn't see a need to go Call of Duty style, honestly.
Well, see, if they haven't gone full Call of Duty, by you still pick up things on the map. The only thing that really lets you customize loadouts is a lot of, like, starting weapons, like a battle rifle or a DMR, an assault rifle, and you don't choose strictly perks. It's more like add-ons to your armor. You choose better mobility because you have stronger legs or radar, instead of having, you know, better penetration with your bullets, because it makes no sense in the Halo universe. You still have to pick up like a carbine or a shotgun on the map, but instead you can choose like in Reach, where you could choose to start out with like a DMR or a carbine or an assault rifle versus a battle rifle.
You know a lot about Halo.
Yeah, I do.
I'm glad, like, someone here does.
Well, I've seen a lot of gameplay videos. I think Machinima put out one where they had like a multiplayer match, and then I watched the one that Colby put up on the site, and it looks like Colby said best, is that they're taking the best parts, the good parts from modern military shooters, and putting them in Halo. By you can choose to have plasma, your loadouts can let you have plasma grenades versus frag grenades. And then you can also have a battle rifle. So battle rifle, plasma grenades, plus a radar. Or you can choose assault rifle, frag grenades, and Prothean vision, which gives you like a 4-second pulse. It's like a sonar. It lets you like see through walls and stuff, and It seems like they're just kind of taking the perk slash loadout system from Modern Warfare series and giving it that Halo twist, but it still feels like Halo, so.
And
Yeah,
I mean, don't get me
naturally.
wrong. I had a lot of fun playing it. I've been ever since I got Black Ops. That was sort of a random buy for me, but I bought Black Ops for 360. I'm really enjoying playing it online. And like
I'm glad someone
it's
is.
yeah. Well, you'd be surprised. There's still a lot of people playing it, but
Oh, no,
it's
that's a personal thing.
yeah.
I think I prefer Black Ops to Modern Warfare at the moment, actually.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, but then again, that's kind of like saying I prefer this hunk of rotten meat over that hunk of older rotten meat.
That's true. But Halo 4 seemed it was really good. The sniping wasn't too serious, although at the same time it kind of was. I mean, it felt a lot like the op from Counter-Strike. You
Oh,
get one
God.
hit on them and they're either dead or they're almost dead, which was awesome. That stuck around from previous Halo games. Same with the battle rifle, the Needler, the was it the new precursor weapons or whatever they're called?
Forerunner.
Yeah, Forerunner weapons. Thank you. I'm thinking Jak and Daxter. I'm so stupid. Yeah, the new Forerunner weapons are really cool. The way that you pick up this shotgun type weapon and it just forms the metal around your hand. It's really cool looking. But yeah, it seems like an updated version of Halo, which is I think exactly what Halo fans want. And I think that 343 Studios is going to be delivering it to. In fact, we got back and I saw a status that was posted that was like, yeah, just got done playing Halo 4. It's actually pretty cool. And somebody was like, poof, quote unquote Halo. I mean, I'll never play a Halo game that's made by anybody other than Bungie. Okay, guys. Really?
Yeah,
That's
it
it?
kind of
Okay.
happens.
That's how that's
People
gonna
don't
be.
think.
Yeah, well, there's always gonna be people like that out there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
just like people are gonna be boycotting Modern Warfare 3 because it's not made by Infinity Ward. Whoop-dee. Or
I mean,
the other dude that made it.
and it's funny too because that's like saying, well, I'm not gonna play Fallout New Vegas because it wasn't made by Bethesda. That's just stupid.
Nee-nee-nee.
Like, why? It's just silly. So that was RTX as far as games go. Comic-Con was huge. They had gameplay demos of Sony Smash Brothers, excuse me, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
I actually like that title more, honestly.
It's actually really fun. I get to play it for a while. I played as Kratos and as Nate Drake, and it's surprisingly fun. It's a lot like Smash Brothers. The only problem that I think that it's going to have is I honestly don't know of anybody who owns a PlayStation 3 who owns more than two controllers, and I think even two controllers is kind of rare.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that local multiplayer component, which is so important to games like that, like Mario Kart and, a game in which they sort of they take out the skill level and they just make it sort of fun, like Mario Kart or Mario Tennis or Mario Party. I'm really just naming Mario games here. Any
Mario
of those,
Party.
yeah, any of those kind of games, you really need local multiplayer. It leans heavily on local multiplayer, and that's not something that PlayStation's never been really good at. And maybe this, sort of marks a paradigm shift with them, but I don't
Well,
think that.
I honestly wouldn't say that it's whether or not PlayStation's good at it. It's just that that's definitely not what they're marketed towards.
Yeah,
I mean,
at
it
the
can
very
handle
least for now,
online.
yeah.
Well, see, I think what might make a difference is actually online multiplayer at this point. Because if they promote, the online multiplayer that is anything that is better than Nintendo's friend code system, people may not necessarily have the same experience of playing Smash Bros. Where it's four dudes in front of a TV. But you're still enjoying the game because you're playing with other people by being able to connect online with your friends without having to worry about the horrendous decision that Nintendo has to have friend codes. That might actually make an impact and kind of make up for the fact that people may not necessarily initially have four controllers in their room.
And I think there's some credence to that argument, but by the same token, I think that online gameplay with games like that isn't that successful. I mean, have you known of more than I think I can actually name two people, only two people who own Smash Brothers and have played it online. Like I can't think of anybody who actually plays
Good
Smash
point.
Brothers online.
did twice.
I did once, but it's not something I actually went out of my way to do. I just did it once to see if my Wii could do it, and I was like, hey, it did it. That's kind of cool, and then I never did it again.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, there's no... Like, the whole point in party games like that is to play it with your friends in, you know, who are in the same room as you, so you can yell and throw popcorn at each other and kick each other in the neck. And I think that really gets lost whenever you play online, and that's a really important component of a brawler-type game like that. So, you know, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, very polished, very clean. It felt like a complete game already, even though it's not coming out for a while, and they definitely have more characters to reveal, which, by the way, they have a pitiful amount of characters as it is. They have, like, a Super Smash Bros. 1 level of characters, so I'm, you know... I'm not looking forward to that.
I think they just revealed Cole McGrath and somebody else.
Well, I mean, of course they would have Cole McGrath. Like, everybody... I don't know. Like, until they're like, Lara Croft and Crash Bandicoot, I'll be like, okay, there's still probably characters coming.
Please tell me you got to play Borderlands 2.
Believe it or not, it was in the Xbox Live Lounge, and I did not get to play it.
Well, what was the point of going?
Yeah, I know. I'm so stupid. You know, Borderlands really, it wasn't my game. I never really got to play it, so I didn't feel a really big urge to go play Borderlands 2. And, you know, it's kind of my fault.
Why? You didn't have an urge to?
Yeah.
Well, with everything else that happens for those 4 days, I've heard the stories of San Diego Comic-Con, and I can only imagine how big that place must be to accommodate all of the random awesomeness that...
Well, like, you know, you have 4 days to go there. I mean, if you have a 4-day pass, you are going to see and do probably most of the things that you want to do. But you really need those 4 days. I mean, we passed by the trailers for, like, Django Unchained, which is a movie that I want to go see, like, at Christmas time. We passed by that trailer, you know, at least a couple dozen times. And I didn't go in until Sunday just because we were doing so much stuff. But I mean, for the other games, so I guess Sega had their own party, which was they had like Sonic Boom, and they were just talking about, I think, Sonic games, and like the Sonic Band came and played and whatever. That was okay. I didn't, you know, we didn't go. and the same with the Xbox Lounge. They didn't have really very many new games that I was interested in, but. I did get to go by the Nintendo booth, and I played the new Luigi's Mansion game. So that
the PDS one?
Yeah, and that gameplay video is going to be up either tonight or tomorrow. Luigi's Mansion 2 Dark Moon. You know, I mean, it plays almost exactly like the one on GameCube, which you would expect. I unfortunately died. I mean, I died in the Luigi's Mansion game.
Looks like I'm buying a 3DS now, especially the XL one when it comes out.
Oh, speaking of that, I actually got to play it on the 3DS XL, and it feels so much better in your hands. Like the one that I have now cramps my hands.
Feels like. That's why I have it instead of a DS. I like being able to hold something in these man hands and it actually be comfortable.
Exactly.
See,
I mean,
the XL does. The XL does this, does that thing, does that for me. Every step of the way.
And you know, my Vita, it fits really well in my hand, and the reason why is because there's not enough hand real estate on the 3DS in order to get a comfortable thing. Like, the corners are constantly poking my palms, and so I don't really know what to do, but whenever I picked up the 3DS XL, I mean, it felt natural and great. If I am going to buy another 3DS, it's going to be an XL version, for sure.
Yeah, like, to play Pokemon Black 2, I had to go back and get a DS Lite, because the DSIs are all region locked for some reason. And so, every time I have to switch to play the smaller version, to play the newer version on a smaller DS, it's a weird...
Yeah, I mean... The XL version is just great. It holds well in your hand. It feels incredible. It feels so much better than the regular 3DS. Although I'm really still confused as to why they didn't add in a second circle pad. But whatever. I mean, they're
you'll buy the extension.
Anyway. I'm not. No, I'm not. I refuse to buy. I got a 3DS. I'm not going to buy a 3DS XL until this one breaks. I'm going to buy a Circle Pad Pro. Because of Kingdom Hearts, and that makes me want to cry, but I'm going to do it anyway.
It makes me want to cry too, honestly.
Let's talk about the Vita then.
I got to play, actually, Sound Shapes for Vita. Sound Shapes is a really cool game where it's like a platformer type game with some kind of interesting gameplay, but the cool part about it is that as you go through the level, you hit music notes that add on to the background song. So as you go through, you start building more and more layers of like this really cool kind of techno song in the background. And in the gameplay video, you can see in the demo video that I'm going to show, you can see like the cool gameplay, but you can't hear the music because they gave me headphones. And I had the terrible oversight to not put the headphones on the camera. but whatever. So yeah, Sound Shapes is really cool for the Vita. I didn't get to play any other titles. There weren't really that many. Although another Sony title that is going to be coming out soon that I think a lot of, a lot of buzz has been around is the new Tomb Raider game. And
that's being released on Vita?
That honestly looks kind of cool.
Yeah, it does. And no, it's not in the Vita. It's PlayStation 3 and 360,
okay.
I think.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just happened to be, like, at the same booth. So I went to go play it, and the gameplay parts are really cool. There's really good conveyance. I knew what I was supposed to be doing at all times. The gameplay is kind of tense, and you have the feeling that Lara can get hurt, and Lara isn't this invincible superhero, and that's really nice. I really like having a sort of vulnerable hero that is just barely making it out of these scrapes, and it really amps up the intensity. The only problem is that they've Metal Gear Solid 4'd it. That's the best way that I can put it, is that you walk 30 steps and then there's another cutscene, and then you shoot a guy and then there is another cutscene, and then you hide behind a wall and there's another cutscene, and I'm like, just let me play the game.
Solid Snake?
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 4. Yeah. That's exactly what it sounds like. It's ridiculous. And I mean, I don't know.
It's the best movie you'll ever play.
Yeah, I guess it's what it's turning into an interactive movie instead of an actual video game. So you gotta choose your pick your poison. Or do you want to have that much? Do you want to sit through the 20-hour experience? I'd probably say.
Lara Croft, choose your own adventure.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'm all for games like that if they are billed as such. So Heavy Rain was a game that did that very well, and that it was like basically this is an interactive movie. You were going to be, making these kind of small decisions and just progressing the plot.
Yeah, they didn't hide that whatsoever with Heavy Rain. They had come out from the very beginning that this is going to be very interactive, but it's still going to be more, it's going to be so focused on the storyline, and you're going to be drawn into the said story that it doesn't matter that a lot of the complaints can be that the gameplay was kind of lacking, because that really wasn't the point of this. Tomb Raider, on the other hand, didn't really start out as an interactive story.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, see, from the first time they showed, I guess, like, that one where she's tied up in front of, like, she wakes up after, and tied up upside down and stuff, I keep getting this, like, this intense, like, Dead Space-ish vibe from it, that it's going to be more like you are fighting for your life every minute, but it's also going to creep you the hell out, because there are going to be a lot of things that are kind of, like, unsettling. But then seeing the gameplay video from, like, E3, it's turning towards more, like, Uncharted territory. That's a very odd phrase, but... But it's going towards that direction, where it's more an action movie that you were playing through as Lara, which I guess I could be okay with, but I don't know if I want to spend $60 on it initially.
Yeah, but Uncharted had so much more gameplay. I mean, Uncharted was about, Nate Drake just exploring stuff, jumping up on things, knocking stuff over, breaking priceless antiques, because that's the kind of guy he is. The problem with doing that to Tomb Raider is that, because I don't have a problem with doing that to Tomb Raider, the problem that they have run into is that they have tried to cram in too many cinematics. I don't know why. It seems like that would take more time to produce, but I mean, whatever. Maybe it was just a side effect of the demo, and that I'll completely acknowledge that it just may be that my view is skewed because of the demo. However, that one gameplay demo that I did, that those 14 minutes convinced me that this is a title that I do not need to buy. It's something that I should rent. So that's what I'm going to do. Okay. And if I get to play it again before that and the gameplay has gotten better or there's, you know, more gameplay, maybe they can reconvince me, but they have lost a sale in me because of what they did. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
Yep. Sounds reasonable.
I also got to play Hitman Absolution. If you've played a Hitman game, it's a Hitman game. So there you go. That's basically all I can say. I'm a really big fan of Hitman. It was kind of cool. You're in this crowded Chinese market. There's a whole bunch of ways to take out this guy. Like basically I pulled a fuse and then I snuck by a cop up to the guy's bedroom and I took out his sniper rifle and then I shot him with his own sniper rifle. And then I hid in a drug dealer's clothes and I just walked out because whatever.
Cool.
I like Hitman, but yeah. Basically, Hitman Absolution is Hitman, so get it.
That's good.
It'll be better than the most recent Hitman, because it was kind of a letdown.
Yeah, I agree. This one seemed to have a lot more like choice, and it seemed to be much more of a hands-off kind of game, you know?
Good.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Oh, I played Ni No Kuni. That was really good.
What?
Ni No Kuni.
What?
Fantastic.
Ni No Kuni?
Explain it to our viewers.
Oh, sorry. Ni No Kuni is a title from Level 5 in Studio Ghibli, the same studio that does the Miyazaki films. So the art style is Miyazaki. The gameplay is Level 5. So, I mean, Tales of Symphonia, Tales of Eretria, whatever. That kind of gameplay, but done in Ni No Kuni fashion. In Studio Ghibli fashion. So it's really, 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 really cool. The art is absolutely gorgeous. It plays like an interactive movie. I guess, you know, the graphics play like that. It's an old school kind of RPG, kind of like Pokemon, actually, because you have two heroes and they each have two companions with them. You can select one of those two companions to go out and fight for you and you control them and, you know, give them moves to do to take down these monsters. It's very neat. It's coming out, I think, in January, and, I mean, they suckered me into it. They were like, well, you know, you could pre-order the game, I guess, but if you pre-order it at Comic-Con right now, not only are you going to get all the pre-order bonuses, which include this sweet book, which gives you all of the monsters, all of their weaknesses and hit points and everything, all the spells you get to cast in the game, lore in the world and everything. It's this really cool kind of book that I really wanted. But I was like, eh, it's $99. You know, it's an extra $30 for the book. I don't know if I want it. And they were like, well, in addition to getting that and the plush toy that you would normally get, you're going to get another plush toy and a cape. And I was like, you had me at cape. So I went ahead and threw down the money, and now I have a cape.
Well done.
Woo! Cape!
Let's see. Was there anything else? I don't
Was there anything
think
else
so.
Important at Comic-Con?
I can't think of much. They did have an Assassin's Creed 3 booth, though it was just an interactive... It wasn't an interactive anything. You couldn't play it. You watched a video of somebody else playing it, which I didn't want to do, especially after I did the exact same thing for South Park and the Stick of Truth. Don't get me wrong, I loved...
I'm excited for that so much.
Dude, I loved it.
I just have to say...
it's so South Park it hurts. Like, we got to see from the very beginning of the game all the way through the first fight, and then they cut it off, and then they went to further in the game. And, I mean, it just looks so funny and so good. The only bad part are the loading times for fights, but the fights themselves are actually pretty cool. It's like an active time battle type system, and, you know, you fight against different people, and you're all... The storyline is that you're all LARPing, and so... Everybody has on really terrible costumes and everything. I don't know. It's really cool. I kind of wish it would have gone to the Assassin's Creed 3 one, but I didn't. Also of note is that there is a Deadpool game. It has been announced. So there you go.
There is a Deadpool game.
Yeah, the trailer didn't really make me that excited for it, though, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see why. I mean, Deadpool is he's a cool character, and I am really happy to see him in more stuff. But you know, the game has to be good in order for me to buy it. It's bottom line.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of feel like they might be trying to overplay the "it's Deadpool, it's the merc with the mouth" kind of thing, and then they kind of lack in the gameplay because they're so focused on making sure that it's funny, and thus by making sure they're so focused on making him funny, it comes off as jokes just being driven into the ground like a dead horse. So.
I really hope they learn to break the fourth wall. I hope whoever's developing it, they'll tell them it's okay, he can do this.
Well, I mean, I'm sure... Okay, I was about to say I'm sure they'll do it justice, but by the same token, there was that one Wolverine game.
There was that, like, four X-Men games.
The one Wolverine game? There was, like, the four X-Men
games. Yeah, sorry, there was every Wolverine game ever, and... The Spider-Man games produced by THQ and Activision. Good. Those were so bad. Like the N64 version? So bad.
Those games.
I actually had it. I bought the Spider-Man game because I thought, well, this is probably going to be good. And then I started off with like gray fog beneath me and just the tops of buildings. And they're like, web sling to get over here. And I'm like, I don't. Can I return this still? What do I do?
Hey, bro, I heard you like superheroes. You should check out Superman 64. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Pick up the car and throw it through the goal.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Okay. I can't really say I have that much faith in the game, but I do hope I'm pleasantly surprised. I'll go there.
Yep. Yeah, I gotta agree with you. So that was basically San Diego Comic-Con. There were a whole bunch of other, you know, free giveaways and people doing gaming events and everything, but that's it as far as new titles go. They had a whole bunch of demos and stuff that's already on the shelves, but I mean, why? So I guess let's move on to the next topic, which is I forgot.
DLC?
Yes. Okay. So This was something interesting. I went to the Penny Arcade panel and somebody brought up to them, so what do you think about DLC and the fact that, you know, you can buy all of these different things? And they brought up the fact that DLC is no longer this big monolithic label that you can put on things and automatically mean that they're bad, because there's such a thing as good DLC. And so I was wondering if either of you had in mind, you know, what you think was maybe a good or a favorable DLC for any of the games that you've played.
I liked the DLC with Red Dead Redemption. You didn't ever have to feel like that you needed the DLC in order to enjoy the game, but it did add some pretty unique aspects towards that game. You know, unique outfits, unique abilities, and, unlocked characters for the multiplayer back when people actually played that multiplayer. And so, you know, I kind of like the DLC. That's kind of like what I'd like to see out of DLC, is that it adds something to the game, but you don't feel like you're missing out on it because it's adding an extra half a chapter to the actual storyline. That I never really liked or agreed with.
I'd say the best example of good DLC was from Borderlands. I got the Game of the Year edition, and it came with all the DLC in it, but in the mindset of, like, if you bought it and then the DLC comes out, each of the DLC packs, most of them were pretty good. And they did, like, kind of like how Devin said, where they don't detract from the game. You don't need them to complete the story. You don't need them because they don't actually have a missing storyline. But they are really fun to play with if you have them. And so they're worth buying. I think also that for games like Battlefield or Halo or Modern Warfare, map packs are great, just not at the price that they are charging them for, and they need to add more of them.
And I completely disagree, honestly, and this is nothing against you. I really hate the idea that you have to buy maps in order to continue enjoying playing the multiplayer, because you know the majority of people have bought the map packs in order to play that, and so there's going to be, you know, a good half of the people playing these games playing on maps that you're unable to play, because even though you spend a full $60 for this game, you have to throw down another $10, $15 to unlock three or four multiplayer maps just to continue playing with certain people or even playing with your friends.
Okay, I'll give you that. But what if they, on top of maps, they included updated weapons, they included maybe better skins, or maybe kind of similar how they're doing the Spartan Ops with Halo 4, if they included an extra mission that would be something that you could do with your four friends in co-op, or like how Black Ops did with zombie maps, They added a new map.
See, now that's different. Map. That's fine. That's an entire mode that's separate from the actual multiplayer. But we're the maps, or even new skins, or, you know, updated weapons and everything. Then a lot of people are going to feel like they don't have a complete game, because now there's these updated weapons with better attachments, or these updated skins that makes the characters look cooler, or they have cool insignias on them and all that. And you just kind of feel like, well, I threw down 60, but I guess if I really want the full game, I need to throw down a 75.
But if the thing is that if DLC is the only way that, like, developers can justify to producer or publishers, DLC is their way of kind of continuing support for the game, as well as their way of convincing that they're going to get more money without making the initial investment $70 or $75, then, you know, would you rather have day one DLC or a week later DLC? And I'd rather have DLC that it's at least the developers get to work on for quality, then just drop support for the game and turn the shut the servers down a year later when Modern Warfare 3 comes out.
Right. Yeah, there are certain games that have DLCs kind of like that, that they're more or less add-ons. They're expansions. See, that's where I see the DLCs coming from, is from the expansions. Okay, when I think of expansion, I think of the original Command & Conquer Red Alert. And there were two major expansions with that. It was Counter-Strike and Aftermath. And they were fantastic. They added a lot more. They added more units. They added bigger maps. They added some levels where you played as both the Soviet and the Allies. And it was a lot of fun. But you needed the base game in order to play it, obviously. That's how expansions work. But it wasn't something that you played through the original game. They were still kind of standalone. So that way, if you wanted to play multiplayer on the original game, you still did. You didn't have to find someone else that had the original game and didn't have the expansion pack maps and units on there, so that way, you know, things can be kept fair, that it was done as an expansion. See, I don't understand why we've completely deterred from the expansion route and gone solely DLC. There was nothing wrong with separating DLC from expansion, because that still gave people the ability to continue playing the game, continue giving money for support to go for the company, and still be able to get their updated everything for that game.
Because the amount of money that they gain from having expansion on a console is going to be less than what they would, or probably would be the margin for gain, for revenue gain, would probably be less than what the publisher would want by putting out a full expansion, because they have to pay for the developers to make more content, and then have to sell it for $40 or $50 when the DLC is easier for them to turn out in small chunks. But the problem is that those, like, expansion packs and DLC, like, chunks that you get for, like, you pay $15 for, doesn't work for every game. You don't want to pay for a chunk of new Uncharted content, because it's a story that has a beginning and an end. So how do you work that out? Or like Halo, you know, Halo's, you know, a story that kind of has a beginning and an end, at least in the single player. So their multiplayer is how they, you know, increase revenue by, you know, making new content in the form of map packs. Mass Effect lets you has in a giant universe that you can create new missions for. Which means BioWare can say, okay, you want to make, goes to EA, say, hey, you want to make money? Let us spend a month or two making, you know, three or four missions about the Protheans, or four missions about this random planet that's in the universe, and we can make up a story about it, you know, ship it out, and you can make money off of us.
Yeah, that I can understand. Like, Mass Effect is a good example of that, and that I can completely agree with, except for one little thing. That's the DLC they had with the Prothean, because I haven't played it with the Prothean, but from what I've heard, it actually adds a lot to the game. So it's kind of disappointing that I didn't get to play along with the Prothean, because I wasn't willing to throw down another $10 or whatever it was when it first came out. But then again, that's just one example. Most of the other DLCs, when I bought the game, that it came included with, like the mission where you can go look at the crash site of the SR-1 Normandy, that was cool. It wasn't something that I felt like was detrimental to the storyline, but it was still a really cool thing to be able to play, and I would have been willing to put down the money just to play that because of how much I'm into the Mass Effect universe. That kind of thing, it's understandable. It's just, we're really kind of getting difficult at finding that line between what's reasonable and what actually should have been included in the main game, like that Prothean thing. I feel like that should have been the main game, because, I mean, honestly, you're playing Mass Effect, and in this last game, you have a living Prothean in your party. Who would not want to have that in their main game, really?
Well, I think that you know, the line that gets drawn between, you know, what gets put in the game, what's DLC, or how the DLC is formed, is a large argument between developers and the dev team and the publishers who want to make money. It's like, it's a constant,
also
struggle.
Because money is money, and they still want money.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, mission things like mission packs or an extra DLC missions for like the Protheans don't fit on all games, so they have so somehow companies have to, you know, convince you know, Ubisoft has to make once more DLC for Assassin's Creed when it's hard to do that unless you make like different side missions for different people because
right.
you know it's hard to do that.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, as far as like good and bad DLC goes, and specifically good DLC, I think it's pretty easy to see what a good DLC is. It's the characteristics are you don't need it to enjoy the original game. It adds a lot to it adds a lot to the game to extend its life, and you know, you can enjoy it. You can enjoy it for sort of a reasonable price. Now, as far as map packs for Call of Duty and everything go, I'm not opposed to buying map packs, but I am opposed to buying multiple map packs for $7 each. I think that's just too much money.
Yes,
absolutely.
Agreed.
If they're going to do a map pack, you put them all together in one big bundle and you get on with it. You're not going to keep releasing map pack volume 2. Now, not only is there a circus, but there's a circus with a carnival attached. Oh my God.
And
guys, come on.
And the worst people, the people that do that the most are Capcom. They do that for Street Fighter and Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom. They did it for both of them. Marvel vs. Capcom 3, right whenever it came out, I was like, no, I'm not going to buy this because I know in 6 months they're just going to come out with Marvel vs. Capcom Super Alpha Hyper Edition. And I'll be able to get 4 extra characters and see a few other different things. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if it's a choice in between having, you know, free expansions and having expansions that we have to pay for, obviously we'd prefer free. But if it's a choice between having sort of a half-done sequel that you have to pay full price for or having a cheap DLC, we're going to go for cheap DLC. It's all in perspective with respect to what game you're looking at. So if you take a look at, say, what Mass Effect 3 has done, and they've done, I think, three updates to Mass Effect 3 that were all free, including DLC and modifying the story or whatever. And you take that and you run that up against Call of Duty, you're going to be like, well, obviously Mass Effect 3 cares more. I mean, that's just obvious. But if you compare, say, you know, what Call of Duty is doing with its map packs and everything, or, you know, even whenever you have some of these, some expansions like the Red Dead DLC, and you compare that to, say, I don't know, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, because you could arguably call that a DLC. It's the same main character, set slightly further in the future, set in equivalent areas, and they've added cities.
I would call that a full-on expansion pack. You're going to enjoy Brotherhood only if you played Assassin's Creed 2. You don't need 2 in order to play it, but it's completely based on that. That is about as perfect of an example of a modern expansion as it gets, only you pay full price for it.
Exactly.
I think it should be pointed out that all of the DLC that we're talking about is nothing but consoles, because a lot of the PC DLC that comes out, mostly 90% via Steam, it never gets much controversy because it's either good or it's bad, and there's also a lot of also added support from like community when it comes to modding.
Wait, what do you mean? A lot of the DLC that we've mentioned is both console and PC. Mass Effect, when I talked about Command & Conquer, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom, there's a lot of, that's the same genre. We're talking about the game, we're not talking about console versus PC. You pay the same price for the PC DLC as you do the console, so.
That's true, but I mean, if we're talking PC specific games, so I mean, or you know, games that are meant to be played on PC, so you know, something that's been brought up by Valve, or you know, something like that.
Oh, I think that's the examples that we're coming up with right now, because there are so many games that have DLC on both console and on PC. It's just that this is what we're thinking of right now, because that's kind of where we go towards.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I guess from my perspective, when you say Assassin's Creed 3, Assassin's Creed, Mass Effect, we talk about Red Dead Redemption or Borderlands, I think console, because that's what I play them on. So I guess
and half those games, I played solely on PC and not on console.
Okay,
so
I guess that's a difference of perspective, because
yeah, exactly.
I'm a console kitty.
Yeah. Yeah, it just depends on what you've been on, because most of these games we talked about are multi-platform, and you know, you mentioned Borderlands, Red Dead and that, or not Red Dead, Borderlands and Mass Effect, you know, those are games that you generally would think about as being consoles, since the first Mass Effect is a console exclusive only. Or it's an Xbox exclusive only, and you know, you can get it on PC now, but originally speaking. But anyways, the point is, a lot of these games I have played on PC just because that's what I tend to go for. You know, first or third person shooters, I tend to get on PC anyways, just because that's what I'm comfortable with. But it's all personal perspective, really.
And I mean, another, I think another thing for why perhaps it doesn't, for perhaps why DLC doesn't work that well on PC, at least now, is has to do with the fact that it's that there's a giant modding community built around PC games, and you don't have that same community with even with console games. For one, because you can't do it. I mean, you can't mod a console game and have it, you know, easily available to download and put on your stuff, right? But even whenever they put in things that could be user generated content, say extra levels inside Uncharted inside Infamous 2. I mean, there's not a lot of people that are going to take the time to do that. Granted, there are some games in which that happens a lot, which, I mean, you could say Little Big Planet, right? And a few other games like that. But I think it's really rare. You're not going to find something like Garry's Mod that's going to come out on a console, because you can't do it.
That's true.
Well, yeah, and, but I don't know of any DLC for Garry's Mod either.
True.
Well, I guess if you want to. At that point, you could argue that any game that that supports different models that you can steal from other games is a DLC for Garry's Mod.
And
you could argue that any kind of any new game that Garry's Mod supports, you can grab like an assault rifle from Modern Warfare 3, that becomes like a DLC pack, sort of, that you could use, that increases the amount, the breadth of like resources that you get when you're playing with Garry's Mod.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are good examples of DLC out there for sure. You can find them. They're not that hard to find. But there are so many examples of bad DLC these days. I mean, especially, you know, Osra's Wrath is one. I guess, what are the most egregious DLC crimes in you guys' eyes?
Crimes? I don't know. The one I see the most of is for the train simulator, but, you know, I really don't think that counts because I don't know.
All aboard, man.
Let's see.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Steam library right now. I'm going to come up with something here.
Huh. You know, I've got one. Pokemon Black 2 and White 2.
Yeah, that's obvious one.
I would say that the game itself is fantastic, but the fact that they had to come up with Black 2 and White 2 to be the versions, to be basically the same version of Black, but it's what Black, the original version, should have been. Everything that they fixed and made better could have been included in the previous version, but because of whatever reason, they had to make an entirely new version and give it a sequel, which is something that they've never done before.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually kind of why I'm a little excited about it. It's only because this isn't something that they've been known to do. This is the first time they've ever done a sequel on this, and I don't know. You know, I've played every, you know, I'm one of those 25-year-old guys that still plays Pokemon every time it comes out, and I have no shame in that because it was always a quality game, and I love reliving my childhood memories on that.
And
so I'm kind of excited to see where this goes, but, you know, I can see.
I mean, it's a quality game, and they've added so much more. They've added so much more to the game that lets you actually kind of invest more time in it than like, okay, you beat the Elite Four, now you're done. There's more.
You're a master.
You're a master, and
I tell you what, I heard you'd beat the Elite Four.
That there's more to it afterwards, which makes it worth investing time and Pokemon into. So it's kind of nice. And but like I said, a lot of these things, I feel like a lot of the features that they've included could have just as easily been implemented in Black 2, or the original Black, sorry. Like, whatever's in Black 2 could have been implemented in Black. And the fact that it isn't is either A, it happened after it shipped, or B, they wanted to get more money. I don't know. But I mean, the fact that like it's still a DS game, but it has 3DS support, and there's, you know, you can use connect it to like two or three different Pokemon apps from the 3DS store, and you can catch special Pokemon stuff. I mean, all of the same kind of world expanding things that they're incorporating with Pokemon are just, you know, they just shifted it over and added a 2 at the end of the box. Still a good game, it's worth buying. I mean, especially if you like Pokemon.
Yeah.
I've got to go with Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. I mean, what they added in 4 characters and a few new stages? I mean, come on, what are you doing to me?
Oh no, yeah. Street Fighter Cross Tekken actually has characters that are locked on the disc and that were unlocked like subsequently as the game came out. It was horrible.
Oh wow.
Like,
okay.
Like they announced that they were gonna have they announced they're gonna have some of the characters locked until, you know, as like months go by and they add new characters, but people found them like they're technically like disc locked content or like thing it was like finding the Prothean in the Mass Effect 3 code when they first released it. It was kind of like a lot of that where they get the game, they find, oh hey, there's characters here that I just can't play with, and why? And
I'm gonna have two on this one. I think a good example of DLC has got to be the Fallout 3 DLCs that came out. Every single one of those I loved. It added a lot of weapons. I loved the additions to the map, the gameplay, the add to the story. Those were great examples of DLC because it didn't do anything to add to the main story that made you feel like you left out. These were just entirely standalone things, and they were fantastic. Worst, I've got to go with Modern Warfare just because, A, I really am getting ticked off with Call of Duty as it is. Everyone knows that. But mostly it's also because of how we just talked about all the different ways they released multiple map packs, and you're paying $7 to $10 just to get some more maps for multiplayer, which is just bogus. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there. I don't agree, especially with the price and the fact that they come out with multiple map packs. Although, you know, and this hasn't been a thing that's exclusive to Call of Duty either. I think Halo did it as well a few times. They had, I think, two discs that you could buy that expanded like maps. Isn't that right, Casey?
Hell, they even went as far back as Halo 2. They had a map pack disc that had extra maps on it after the game came out. They've been doing it since Halo 2.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's unfortunate. But, okay, so the next topic, and this sort of leads into that, is how do you change... Let's say that, you know, a company like Capcom commits this sort of egregious thing where... You know, let's say they come out with Marvel vs. Capcom 4, and they're like, you know, they release it, but, you know, maybe some people don't buy it. Maybe a lot of people that want to buy it won't because they're aware that they're going to come out with another Marvel vs. Capcom, you know, Ultimate Edition in 6 months. But maybe they don't. Maybe they've changed their tune. You know, how do you convince somebody to do that? And I think public perception is a really big issue as far as gaming companies go. Specifically, a really good example currently is the PlayStation Vita. I mean, regardless of what you think about it, a lot of the arguments are, well, the PlayStation Vita just doesn't have any games. If you actually go in and look at how many eShop games are available for 3DS, how many cartridges are available for the 3DS, and then you do the exact same thing for Vita, Vita has more games. It has quality games, too. I mean, it's just that it's an anecdotal sort of thing where you're like, well, I mean, it just doesn't have as many games. It just doesn't,
it's
but
not
it does.
Marketed. It doesn't have the same kind of marketing that Nintendo does. Nintendo has a brand that public has trusted since, you know, the late 80s. I mean, this is something that we know. Getting the word out about Vita and everything is getting to be a lot more difficult solely because they're not being marketed the same manner that Nintendo is, and it's hard to compete with a brand name like Nintendo. Yeah, PlayStation's been around for a while as well, and people know and trust that name, but, you know, a PlayStation handheld versus Nintendo handheld. I mean, the Game Boy. We've been having Nintendo handhelds since the first Game Boy, and each one of them, minus the Virtual Boy, has been pretty great. So it's just a matter of marketing, really, trying to get the word out there, so...
And I think that's part of it, but by the same token, I mean, like a very specific chunk of information, you know, saying there's not enough games on Vita. I don't know how something like that gets started, but it does, and then it becomes sort of a prevailing thing that everybody knows, or like.
I think it comes down to, like, exclusive games. Like, okay, for the PSP, a better example is to look back at the PSP and the 3DS. Like, the 3DS came out with things like Professor Layton, Pokemon Continuing On got better by using two screens. Like, the PSP had games like, were able to extend series like God of War by putting prequels on the smaller channels. It was able to port a lot of, like, older games from PlayStation onto the PSP. And it got, even though it was never that strong in comparison to 3DS, it was still itself a good system. I think the Vita needs a strong title aside from a port to make it, you know, to really to market it. I don't want to say market, to make it strong, to make the actual Vita itself be like worth buying. Like for me, a game for me that's worth buying the Vita for is the Persona 4 remake and Lumines. Like Lumines that's coming out or that's already out, and then the Persona 4 remake. I think that people look at the Vita and they're like, okay, what are the games available? Okay, I don't care enough to play those games to buy the Vita. You know, they look at like Mortal Kombat or Uncharted, and if you already got a PS3, then you can play Uncharted and Mortal Kombat. If you don't, then you're probably not going to get it. You may not want to get the Vita in the first place. So I think that it's there's plenty of games. It's just that for people, it's looking at what games are there and whether it's worth buying, whether the Vita is worth buying to play those games.
Well, that's another problem though, is that for one, the Uncharted game for Vita is a completely new game. It has absolutely nothing to do with any of the other Uncharteds besides, you know, continuing the storyline or being a prequel. It's the exact
Sure.
same thing as God of War. God of War Ascension is the one I'm specifically talking, or maybe not Ascension, but Chains of Olympus.
Ascension,
There we
yeah,
go.
Chains of Olympus, that's it.
So yeah, the I mean, you know, how do you deal with public perception being like that? And I mean, even this isn't just a Sony problem either. Nintendo is having this problem increasingly with their console being perceived for casual gamers or for just families. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that imagery, I guess, but it's something that you know, they would have to change if they wanted to, you know, get into a more hardcore gamer-centric market. I mean, that even shows inside their press conferences, like the one in which they announced Zombie U. They were like, Zombie U is going to be for the mature gamer, and it's a mature game. And they had to specifically say those things. I have never heard, you know, Sony or Microsoft be like, you know, Call of Duty is for a mature gamer. Like, because they don't have to say that. Nintendo does. Nintendo feels the need to say, hey, we still apply to core gamers and we still apply to people over the age of 10. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's
Well,
still.
look at Nintendo's start. I mean, the biggest things that they're known for is, you know, is their titles that they're still making. Mario, Legend of Zelda, Mario Party, Brawl, and everything. These are all family-friendly games. I mean, this is kind of what they built their name on without even meaning to. And so they feel that the only way to get serious gamers to come to them is to let them know, hey, we'll help you all out too, we swear.
Well, see, at the same time that like Mario and Zelda are family-friendly titles, they're still hardcore titles because they're challenging and they're fun to play.
Oh,
And
yeah. I would not let any 6-year-old play No More Heroes. No way in heck would I let them do that.
but you but you would gladly give them Skyward Sword or Wind Waker, even though that could be argued to be more of a graphic game because you're using swords to kill monsters. I'm
Well, there's a
saying
difference between using a sword to kill a monster as you would in a fairy tale versus using a sword to kill another human being on the streets of
Exactly.
New York.
That's the point, is that kids have been playing Mario and Zelda for so long because it's something that not only our parents approve of, but they're fun and challenging. You know, most of the Zelda game, I'd say every Zelda game except maybe two, has been challenging and entertaining and fun to play, and the story's gotten better and the graphics gotten better. But when it comes to the hardcore versus the casual, you can't make. Now that there's a distinction between the two, and the developers are making a distinction between the two, they're making games that are either catered towards one or the other. I think that in the past, Nintendo has made games for both hardcore and casual without even paying attention. I would gladly have somebody sit down and play Zelda with me because you don't necessarily have to be a hardcore gamer to enjoy it. Same thing with Mario.
Yeah, but I mean, the problem is whenever that public perception starts to be a negative thing. So for Nintendo specifically, they don't have a problem selling to families. They develop games for families. They develop games for kids. They have a strong market there, and that's not necessarily a problem. But whenever it gets to be like, you know, PlayStation Vita, whenever it's the Vita doesn't have any games. The Vita is, you know, the Vita only has ports. The Vita only has this. If you actually take a look at the data doesn't support that.
I wonder if it'll be like PS3, how in the PS3 slowly grew in strength because they added on more titles, similar to how the 3DS is now. In the beginning, the 3DS did not have that many titles. In the the perception of, whether it's perception or fact, people didn't buy it because they believe there weren't any titles. And then just as more games come out, that like it's inevitable that the Vita library will grow until eventually like that perspective will change because I'll look back and go, oh, hey, there are a lot of games. I can justify buying this.
Yeah. But because I think another part of that, though, I mean, whenever you take it to, we can even apply this to consoles, even as early as 2 years ago, I heard people being like, well, I'm not going to buy a PlayStation 3 because there's no games on it. And I'm like, yes, there are. There are tons of games on it. I can give you a list of them.
God, I love the PS3.
I think what people leave off when they say that, though, in the common reception is that the better sentence to use is that there are not games that I want to play. I would say that 2 years ago, there weren't enough games that I wanted to play on the PS3 because at the time, you know, I'd rather have played Halo than Final Fantasy or, Final Fantasy or Uncharted or, you know, even though I've never really played God of War or Uncharted even though I loved Metal Gear Solid, I'd never played it as much. So the PS3 didn't, I invested my money in a 360 instead. So it isn't been until now that I actually have to play PS3 games that are exclusives.
Well,
so
but the 360, the 360 also had that problem too. Whenever they had all those console failures, all of a sudden it was, oh man, can't wait till your 360 red rings. Why would I invest my money in something that's just going to break in 2 years? And I mean, you know, they brought out the new console. If you take a look at the failure rates are still relatively low for the 360, even at its peak, they were still pretty low. And as you know, as the years have gone by, you know, they've changed chipsets, they've gotten better fans, they've done different stuff to it so that it makes it a more stable console. And, you know, but, and you could say this all day, you could say, well, they've changed these things, they've done this, they've changed that. But, and I can guarantee you in the next conversation that person has with somebody else, they're going to say, well, you know, it's still red rings, still going to be a problem. PS3 still has no games. Xbox 360 is going to break on you. Vita has no games and Nintendo's for kids. So I'm going to say on my PC gaming master race.
See, and I think that's going to take people literally sitting down and saying, okay, either A, you making them, or B, enough people around, like with the Game Boy Advance into the original DS. I remember when I first got my SP and then the DS came out, people were like, why would I get a DS when I have my SP that plays Game Boy Advance games and Game Boy Color games and stuff? Until all of my friends started having DSs, and it's like, oh, well, maybe I should get one too. And I think that the same thing that has happened, I think the same thing kind of has to happen is that the social pressures that, you know, you ask yourself, why would I buy a Vita? Why would I buy a Vita? Then the answer will come when all of their friends have one, or when they're like four or five games and, oh, hey, I want to play Luminous, I want to play Gravity Rush, I want to play Sound Shapes, I want to play Persona 4, and I also want to play Black Ops and Assassin's Creed when it comes out on the Vita. Now all of a sudden your perspective changes. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I can buy it now. And then when more people do that, all the people who are, you know, Nintendo kiddies are still screaming to talk about PC Master Race will eventually probably break down and get one.
And I mean, I think that marketing doesn't have a whole ton to do with that, but I think marketing can definitely flip your perception really quickly. We're about out of time. It is at the end of the podcast. So any final thoughts, anybody?
Just a few. One, I'm gonna eat some great food and we're gonna go watch Avengers again because it's awesome. And also, I have to say, I just now realized that my PS3, I've had it since launch and I've played the crap out of it. I mean, heck, I got Skyrim for it originally. That tells you how many hours are on it. That thing is still running strong. I've got to give props to Sony for that console because that thing has survived many, many Devon hours, and that's just cool. So just saying.
Yeah, I had my PS3 for a very long time until it got a very strange issue that they apparently had never heard of in the factories, so I ended up getting like a PS3 discounted. But yeah, I mean, my console was very stable. So yeah, Casey?
I think that either way, I'm going to buy a lot of games this fall because there are a lot of games that I want to buy on both consoles. And depending on...
As well as the Steam Summer Sale, just saying.
Oh, yeah.
And depending on what games you want specifically that are exclusives, Borderlands 2, Tomb Raider, that's going to tell you what console you want to buy if you're deciding to invest in one.
All right, well, I guess that would be it. We will see you next month. Have a good month of good gaming.
Yeah, will do.
Later.